Hello and welcome to the Inspiring Women Interviews with Amanda Alexander. Interviews are with female leaders who are passionate about helping all women to achieve success. Together, we can change the world. You can find out more about Amanda at amandaalexander.com. Enjoy the show. Today, I am really pleased to be interviewing Tina Fried of E2W. Now, Tina co-founded a company called E2W, which is a financial markets professional services company, and she founded E2W about 10 years ago. Now, what E2W does is they deliver business outsource processing and consulting and contracting services, but they deliver those services with a bit of a twist. And here's the twist that I think you'll be really interested in for this interview. E2W have built this global business based on flexible and agile working. They've established a model that solves the challenges facing a diverse talent pool of women, and particularly from financial services background. So I'm really excited to be interviewing Tina today because I know that she is going to give us a real insight into what you need to do if you are a woman and you perhaps have a family and you're looking to continue your career and you're thinking, how on earth do I do this, given the level of flexibility that you perceive that your organization or your industry might need? Tina is definitely the woman to be asking these questions. So Tina, welcome. Oh, and what I want to say also is Tina is obviously a mum herself, and I'm going to ask her about how she started E2W right now. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. So you started E2W, and I believe you started E2W because of your experience of becoming a mum yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Very briefly, my background has always been within financial services, and I worked for over 15 years in the city, and then I had a baby, and that was a huge impactful moment for me. And I realised that the choice then, about 15 years ago, was to either have a child or have a career. And I didn't think that was right. So I saw a gap in the market. The opportunity for people like me to continue working in the city and meet my aspirations to be a mother were really non-existent. So I started my own business, really to make sure that I could satisfy both my need to be a mother and my need to have a career. And I knew I couldn't be alone in that experience, and I'm obviously not. I knew that there must be a way that we could offer flexible working for women who wanted to develop their hard-earned careers and still be mother. But I also knew and sensed that the city-based firms that I'd worked for could benefit from the experience and expertise gained, and potentially it would be a much more cost-effective way of using that talent. So from the outset, we sought to tap into that significant resource pool of typically women who'd left the city mm-hmm. when they're excluded from financial institutions because those firms couldn't offer that true work-life integration.
So you got a pool of women who were saying exactly the same as you, that just feels like we can't do this because the demands that the organisations are putting on us, we can't meet because of our roles as mothers as well. What response did you receive when you started talking to employers about these women and your idea?
When we started, we effectively wrapped services around these women and took those ideas back into these institutions. Now, the idea of needing to be visible, or the term presenteeism is used quite regularly at the moment, mm-hmm. Was and still is a big issue in some areas where you had to be visible sitting in their offices to be working. Mm-hmm. And we proved that actually it can be differently, and this is certainly not the case. So we have done a lot to change that attitude. The other lesson that we learned very quickly and that we were able to get over was the issue about location. Mm-hmm. So we set our offices up where the women lived as opposed to where they were working. And that helps hugely with regards to time for commuting and travelling. So it enables them to be more flexible purely because their workplace is not very far away from their home life.
So you actually set up kind of sort of teleworking type of offices. So would you have different women working for different organisations within one hub? Is that the kind of thing?
Yes. So the other thing which we learned very quickly after we set up is that also women, we didn't want home-based employees. We wanted women working in an office because that's what they wanted. So and a lot of the reason for that is that intellectual stimulation that people get when they meet and work together. So all our team work in our offices, whether that's in the UK or the States, or obviously because we've opened in Asia recently. But they like to go to work. They like to discuss their both home and work aspirations with each other. Mm-hmm. And they deliver services from our offices into our various clients.
And how many offices do you have now, and where are those offices?
We now have four offices globally. So we have an office in Kent, which is our sort of market, about 30 miles outside of the cities. Mm-hmm. We opened in the USA. So we have an office in Morristown, which is New Jersey. Again, people who deliver into Manhattan, but they live in New Jersey. So the office is there. We opened about 2 years ago in Singapore and also recently in Zurich for all the same reasons.
Wow, you do realise, Tina, that after people have listened to this, you're going to get calls and emails saying, please, can you open an office in Hull and in Cornwall and in Cheshire and in Liverpool?
Yes, and you know, we'd be delighted to. And you know, obviously, the more we can grow, then the more people we can help, then that's what we're about. Interestingly, the last couple of years, we have broadened the services that we're offering to enable people who, and particularly women, who actually can work within their clients' sites, but again, in a flexible way. Flexibility does mean different things to different people. And that can be they want to work short days. It can be that they want to work 2 long days. It can be that they, some people want to work 9 to 5 because they're currently working 6 to 11. So there are different ways and different practices that we can put in place to enable women to continue to work.
So if you have a woman who comes to you and she says, you know, this is what I do, I have this expertise, and this is the, will she typically ask you what opportunities there are, or will she be asking you what kind of flexibility, you know, this is the kind of flexibility I'm after? How does it tend to start?
Yes, so we do a lot of work in building what we call an ETW community, which is full of women who actually want to work in a flexible way. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of work in understanding what flexible way means to that person, because I think that's fundamentally important. Mm. Now, sometimes we have client requirements where we need specific expertise, mm-hmm. And others we have brilliant resources, women who actually can offer clients certain expertise, and so we try and match it that way as well.
Okay, so is there an art to it rather than a science, or is it a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both. Obviously, what you've got to offer has to be in demand, but I think what's in demand is sometimes, if you like, clients don't necessarily know what's out there, if I can say that.
Yes, I know what you mean. You have to educate them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And how have attitudes changed since you started E2W? Is it easier now to convince employers to be more flexible?
Yes, it is. Over the last 10 years, really, there's been huge amounts of work in addressing the gender diversity issues. And attitudes have changed. Most organisations now have put gender diversity on the agenda, and it's, you know, they've got to have a sustainable policy. We have, however, had to ensure and educate, if you like, that that's not just a tick box exercise. And so, for instance, in that contracting consultancy market, it is quite a challenge because it is a male-dominated sector, but mm-hmm. we're making sure that they are aware that there's an incredible talent pool of women who can do the job just as well or even better.
When I was a project manager many years ago, the new right to request flexible working in the UK had just come in, and it was that, you know, it was the right to request, which I believe it still is. So I exercised my right and requested flexible working. The response that I got is, quote unquote, there's no such thing as a part-time project manager. Faced with that kind of response, how would you respond?
Because I'm being interviewed, I would respond with, actually, we've proved time and time again that there absolutely is such a thing as a very, very good project manager who mm-hmm. actually works in a different way. Mm-hmm. Now, you can label it part-time, you can label it full-time, whatever you want to do, but let's look at what that person can deliver. Mm. And it's the outcome of mm-hmm. that work that's important, not how many hours it takes the person to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that mindset, it has changed, but it needs to still change. And then I will say also, I think it's incredibly important, and a lot of the innovation now is around what is flexible working. Mm. 10 years ago, flexible working was only part-time. You know, some of our employees work 9:30 to 2:30, and they do as much in 5 hours as they would if they went into the city and worked 8 hours.
Mm. Yeah, and I think as time has gone by, you must have amassed a great deal of proof and testimonials from organisations where it's actually working.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've absolutely proved it has, and it does. And you have to think, and it's focusing on what that role requires, what the outcomes of that role that you're looking to fill mm. is much more important than the metrics, if you like, of how many hours that person's doing. And I think as we can start shifting that mindset and stop putting, writing a job description and then putting how many hours it's got to be, let's think about the output, then I think that's where we're going to start winning even more.
Yeah, the Google model is trailblazing there, isn't it? With the having that they have no fixed hours, they have no hours contracts at all, and it's about putting the employee's well-being first, but still expecting a lot from them, as I understand.
Yeah. Well, and that's a lesson and we've learned, and also that we can, evidence, and that people working 5 hours, that their payoff is that they get the flexibility that they're looking for. Mm. So they work really hard and are very productive in the time that they're working.
Yes. And you know what? I don't know if you know this, but it's based on the principle of reciprocity. As human beings, we have certain drivers, and one of them is reciprocity. If that you give somebody something, then they feel the need to give back, and it's a fundamental human driver. So simple.
Yeah,
so simple.
It is simple. But I don't know why, in a work sense, we haven't really sort of done more about it. But it's there, it's happening, and we've proved it.
I'd like to ask you something now about flexible working that's come from my own experience with my clients. In fact, I was coaching someone just this morning, and she is she's a sales director, and she was saying that she wants to, that she's not as happy in her company now as she once was. There's a few things that aren't quite doing it for her, as happens with every career and every company at some point. Now, she has got a blocker, and that blocker is the perception the belief, whatever you want to call it, that if she leaves her company, it will be much, much more difficult for her to achieve the same salary, the same seniority in a new company, because she hasn't proven herself. She hasn't got that relationship. There's not the loyalty based there. And I found that over the years with so many of my clients, that they might have flexibility within their company, but they feel that it's almost career limiting in a way, because they feel like they have to stay where they are, because it's just going to be far, far more difficult to establish the flexibility with a new company. Now, my approach to that is that you have to, when you're looking for a job, you have to establish what it is that you want the flexibility and have the courage to actually present your worth, but to stick to, well, you know, obviously have that discussion, but to have your set in stones in place. What would be your advice to women like that who feel that they can't leave the company they're in because, you know, they won't get the same level of flexibility?
I think, and maybe this is a trait of women, a little bit is confidence, but if they thought about what they can offer and how they can help that business and how they can support a new company, surely then that's attractive in its own right. And then again, the payoff of that is actually you will deliver that, but in return, you want to work in a different way. Mm. A lot of people listening to this may think, well, that's easy for me to say. Mm-hmm. But we've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And again, it's about saying, look, I'm valuable. I have lots to offer. I have lots of experience that you would benefit from. Mm. For me to be able to do this, I would like to work in a flexible way. And flexibility to me means whatever it is. So there is no harm in trying. And if the company that she's going to, that she potentially could go to, mm-hmm. isn't open to that, then does she want to work there anyway?
Yes. Mm. So it's about having the courage to go for it, and the courage to and the awareness to, yes. look at the company's culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I guess to keep the faith that the companies are out there, and as you say, it's getting better.
I think it is getting better, and it is keeping the faith, and it is saying, look, I can really help you, and this is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yes,
so it's challenging that. It's challenging the status quo. It's challenging to say, why wouldn't you employ me? Because I can do the role.
Yeah. Knowing your value.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And thanks, Tina. Maternity leave and the whole game of playing catch up on your career or dropping out altogether. I guess, you know, one thing that we can do to address this issue is to introduce more flexibility. Do you have, you know, anything to add to that as to what we can do to address the issue of losing women after maternity leave?
Where we are, I think it's accepted now, and I think it's got to be, that women have babies. End of. Women do have children. It isn't necessary, and it's not a bad thing, and it's not a difficult thing if you have the right processes in place to support them during that time. Now, some very simple things that I think you could do, and from my own experience, you know, nobody spoke to me during my maternity leave or pre or post having children. Mm-hmm. From my organisation. Now, I would have appreciated just a call occasionally, mm. to update me on what's going on, mm. And also to make me feel still involved.
Mm.
I think that should be done as a matter of course, and I think companies are better at doing that. I also think that you should have a conversation with your employer about, mm-hmm. what it is you're looking to do,
mm.
Now. you're not necessarily going to be able to say what you're looking for in 2-3 years' time, but you can certainly explain what you're looking and what your requirements are now, and try and work a way that that's going to work for both of you.
So collaboration, essentially.
It's collaboration, not assumption. And a lot of the old antiquated old maternity leave, let's leave them alone, I think is completely the wrong approach. I think it is collaboration, it's understanding what your requirements are now, not assume that they're potentially not going to come back or they're looking for something else. I think it's a conversation that that absolutely is fundamentally important to have, make sure that your requirements are understood.
Although certainly British law actually doesn't facilitate that, because employers have to be very, very careful that they don't contact someone on maternity leave if the woman has said she doesn't want to be contacted. Am I right?
Yes, but again, what I'm saying is about choice.
Okay.
You can say, look, I don't want to be contacted for 6 months, or you can say, contact me after 2 months. But it's that absolute openness in terms of what you're looking to achieve from this and what you think you're going to want now, not in 3 years' time. Because I think a lot of the issues come when there's assumptions from both sides as to what the maternity actually means.
Yes. Okay. I like that. Collaboration, not assumption. Tina, I'd like to move on, and I would like to ask you about a blog post that is that you recently published on E2W. And for anybody listening to this, if you go to e2w.co and search for the blog post, Forget Supermums, We Need Real Working Mothers. This is the one that I'm going to be asking Tina about. I was really pleased to read this. I found it very refreshing that the anonymous guest poster on this blog had said, forget supermums. And it reminded me of the interview I did with Kristin Pressner, who's the first interviewee on the podcast. And Kristin said, she said she didn't think it was possible to have two alpha careers, as she called them. And she said that the reason that she was able to grow her career was with the support of her husband, Daniel, who is I don't know if I'll use the wrong word, and apologies, but the house husband, Daniel, holds everything together at home and is there whilst Kristen is growing her career. So I'd love to know your thoughts on the whole concept of Superman, because I think it's one we're going to be talking about more and more. Has your experience been that there's a conspiracy of silence amongst a few elite women to kind of make it look as if they're, you can have it all and but only if you're like them?
I don't think it's a conspiracy. What I think has happened is that the focus has been very much placed, and that's a publication, it's investment, if you like, it has been in the top 100 companies, which is where you get that super mum. There has been lots of work done, and it's very good work, by the 30% Club, which targets women on boards. And all the work, all the press coverage has been around these, fantastic women who've achieved that board level position. So hence I think a lot of people now are saying, well, it's not everybody, one, wants to get to the board level, but two, there are lots of different women at different levels within their organization who should be recognized and aren't. So I think it's purely the focus, but I think, and we believe, that the gender-centric innovation really is much more rife in the SME market, so the smaller companies, where it's about encouraging and repeating the innovation that smaller companies have been able to adopt rather than the larger companies. So we've got to shape the way we work, and what we're trying to do, and E2W is trying to do, is encourage the larger companies to adopt some of the practices and innovation that we've put in place, which addresses women at all levels from people who start to, very importantly, the middle managers, to actually get to the senior managers or give them the choice to work in the way they want to.
And that point about middle managers is very important, I think. And we were talking about this before we started the interview. I mean, we both believe that the middle managers is where the difficulty lies, because the support structure is not quite so easy to put in place. So what are your thoughts on how we can support that, you know, that vast army of talent that is middle manager talent?
I think that, again, there's lots of ways that we should be supporting the middle managers. And these women really are the future board members, if you like, from the larger organisations. And they're also the people who will provide the innovation in the future in whatever field that they're in. Just to share an example with you that I came across recently from somebody who was a middle manager who was asked to take a promotion. And she said no to that promotion because at the time she wanted to finish what she felt was her current role. She enjoyed working with her team and she wanted to finish it really well. Mm-hmm. She also wasn't sure that the area that where the promotion was in was the right area for her to go into. What happened to her was there was an immediate assumption that she wasn't ambitious, which meant that a year later she was passed over because nobody asked her again because they felt she just didn't want to do anything else other than be in that role. And I think there's lots of lessons there to be learned. You know, it was at the time it wasn't right for her, and that's a great thing. But you need to have the framework to enable these women middle managers to state that, and also understand that their requirements are different. Now, maybe in that situation, a man would have said yes, please, and gone, and that's the differences. And we need to embrace the differences, but we need to understand why people are saying what they are and the women are saying what they are, because we need to understand what the what their aspirations are and the timescales for that. So helping middle management women is fundamentally important. Understanding what the requirements are is important to have that mix of and to retain them, to allow them to continue to grow and aspire to wherever they want to be.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing here is it's all down to communication, isn't it?
It is communication, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Thanks, Tina. Thank you. I'd just like to ask you a few questions, kind of personal questions, really, about how you make it work, how you run this global company, you know, and keep your head. What's your work-life balance? What's your definition of flexibility for you?
My definition of flexibility for me is allowing me to achieve in my career and achieve in my family life. And what I, again, learned very quickly and had to be very disciplined at was to set priorities in both areas and make sure that I met those priorities in both areas. We know what's important to us. We know what's important to our family. And I think I was lucky because I do have a great support network, both with my colleagues in work and with my family at home, to enable me to do that.
Okay. And what are your priorities for your life and how you run the business, how you are outside of business?
My priorities are it's simply to achieve in both and to make sure that everybody around me is also benefiting and getting what they want from it, and that's fundamentally important to me. It's great, huge satisfaction when we employ different women who, and suddenly it all clicks and they sort of feel that they're able to go and watch the school play, they're able to continue with an MBA, and they're also able to help and support clients with their knowledge, and it's a great feeling of satisfaction, that is.
Oh gosh, I can understand that. So for you, you said to me twice, you know, what's important is I achieve in both. And I was going to ask you, what does that mean, achieving? And it sounds like what achieving is that you help other women to achieve their goals.
No, absolutely, yes, absolutely. And it is about that. It's something that I've always been very passionate about. You know, achieving at work means everybody is literally working their way they want to do it, and that's great. And we have there's a great environment in the offices because of the framework that we've got. And achieving in family life, as we all know, is you know, sharing successes with your children, but most importantly, being there to share their successes, because as we all know, you sometimes get a finite time to listen to that story or to see them cross the line. And I think it's been lovely to be able to do that.
And your children are grown up. The youngest is 19, is that 19, right?
Yeah, 19.
So tell me what it's. My children are 8 and 13. So having you know, children from that age to 22, how do you create that family time when they're two have flown the nest and one is perhaps about to?
How do I what? Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Create that family time, that time of connecting with your family.
Okay. You again, it's priorities. It's when you're at home. They're my priority, and when I'm at work, my work is my priority. But what I've been able to do is mix the two, and one doesn't exist without the other. Mm. So all of us at work share our family lives, and we're all very much aware of where each of our children are. And it's funny when the 11 plus results come out or the GCS results come out, because we all share in those conversations. And at home, all the children are aware of what we do. Mm. So, and I think that's the balance that I wanted. It's not one without the other.
Mm. Mm. I like that. Yeah. So it's integrated rather than knowing the twain shall meet. Mm.
It is integrated.
Is there anything in your life that's consistently challenging? Do you ever feel like you'd like more time or you know, less something?
The consistent challenge really is the constant obstacles that we face around flexible working. Mm. But I also, to be honest with you, see that as an opportunity, because the more people who raise it as an obstacle, the more people we can say, actually, it's not an obstacle. And we can prove it. So, but it is a challenge to constantly have to say, okay, look at your outcomes. What are you looking for? We can work in a different way.
Mm. Okay. I want to ask you about purposeful life, and I suspect that you've probably already answered that in terms of, you know, what is your life purpose? A huge, huge question.
I'm going to go back to sharing both my achievements with family and career at both the same time, which, you know, it's sharing and being able to engage and succeed in both areas.
Okay. Great answer. Love it. Thank you. Do you ever doubt yourself? Have you ever doubted yourself, you know, with building up this global company?
Of course I have. But I think that's a personal trait more than anything else. Can I achieve what I want to? Is more a question that I would ask myself. Can you really do what you're setting out to do? I often ask that, but it doesn't stop me trying. I think it's important to try, and if sometimes whilst you're trying, you'll find a different way of doing it.
And whilst you're trying, and even if you're having those doubts and fears, or et cetera, is there anything that helps you to keep going, to not give up?
looking at what I've achieved, I suppose, if I had to say something there, I think it's don't focus on the negative, focus on the positive. And that's very important. And focus on what you can do rather than what you can't.
Love it. Okay. Yes. Focus on what you can do rather than what you can't.
Yeah. And that's important with everything you do, I think.
Thank you, Tina. I'm just want to ask you, just bringing our interview to a close. Do you have a mantra or kind of a favorite inspirational quote? Something to leave us with that we can repeat to ourselves.
Yeah, there's one which resonated with me a long time ago, and that was the Mahatma Gandhi quote, where we must become the change we wish to see in the world. Because that is about self-worth. It's about trying as much as you can yourself to be that person rather than expecting other people to do it for you. But thinking about that also, growing up, both my parents always said to me, you can do anything you want to be if you put your mind to it. And I do think that's very true. And I would add also at the end of that, so what's stopping you? Because mostly the only thing that's stopping you is your belief that you can do what you want to do.
And when you get to that old chestnut, that belief that lack of belief that you can't do it,
yep.
What do you do then? Or what advice would you give then when that thing stops you?
I think if it's stopping you, you've got to think why it's stopping you, and then think, okay, is there another way of doing it?
Okay, yeah. Feel the lack of self-belief and do it anyway, a different way.
Do it anyway. I think and it can be done. You know, if we want it badly enough, I think it can be done. And it's not going to happen overnight, mostly, but, you know, there's the next step is usually quite small, and I think it'll give you the confidence to go for the bigger step.
Yes, baby steps. So take the baby steps first and then go for the bigger step.
Go for the bigger steps.
Tina, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing so much on this interview.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Women interviews. You can find the episode show notes, backlist episodes, and full transcriptions of each interview at amandaalexander.com/podcasts. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at AA The Coach or find me on Facebook at Amanda Alexander Coach.